RNZ National, Friday afternoon, time for Critter of the Week, in which Nicola Tookie from the Department of Conservation introduces us to a native species that we probably haven't come across before. I know you won't have come across today's species. Nicola joins me now. Hi.
Ahiahi marie.
How's it going?
It's Friday, so I know we're all excited about it.
Yeah. Friday means something a bit different in lockdown, I've got to say. It's still good, but it seems to, time just seems to stretch and contract and become quite magical and mysterious.
Oh, yes. Actually, how could I have forgotten? Sorry about that. Yes.
But I hope you're going to enjoy catching up with friends for a drink, perhaps, or just generally some sort of socialising this weekend.
No, so I don't. So I think because I socialise all week, when I get to the weekend, I just retreat and like a critter, like one of the many critters we talk about, I retreat into my habitat and pull a duvet over my head and I'm
perfect. Go into a torpor.
Yeah, that's right. My weekend torpor.
Well, fair enough.
I'm always in awe of people who kind of get to the weekend and then roll around like mad and socialising. I don't quite have the energy for it. So, you know, you do you, and I'll sit in a cupboard and do that.
You're one of those complicated people who, not to get into psychoanalysis in what is essentially a conservation slot, but who can be an extrovert when required and does a great job being centre of attention, and yet doesn't necessarily get her energy from other people, sometimes needs a bit of time to chill out and build the old battery power back up.
I think that's a very accurate reflection, Jesse. Well done. After 6 years, I'd be disappointed if you couldn't describe me.
Tell me about your relationship with your parents. No, actually, we've gone deep enough.
Gone too far. But, you know, I do actually pop out again on Monday, full of energy, full of excitement about the things that, you know, we're going to, the work we're going to do to save the things, much like the, a kiwaya or the cloudy bay moth.
Which, yeah, now this is not this week's critter, but it's been in the news, so we thought we'd give it a shout out.
Yeah, definitely. We're going to do our headlines. So this is also known as the cloudy bay moth, also known as a mat daisy jumper. It much like, you know, an extroverted introvert who disappears, pops out again. So we thought it had gone extinct and had not seen the mat daisy jumper kiwaya cloudy bay moth for 3 years. And it was discovered again this week, I think.
Yeah, amazing. It's such an interesting critter too. It was probably deserving of its own slot, but it's a flightless moth.
Yes, so many of New Zealand's moths, much like many of New Zealand's birds, are flightless. I particularly like this one. So it's flightless, it jumps to get around. And I don't know about whether you have, in your family have one, but when I was a kid, I was never allowed a trampoline, partly because I was very uncoordinated and was on a fairly frequent a kind of trip to the local hospital. As a rebellion against not being allowed a trampoline when I was a kid, we have trampoline for my little boy.
Spend yeah, I get that.
A lot of time on the trampoline, so he jumps to get around it as well. But this is what's lovely about this is it is the crucial importance of monitoring. So we have a bunch of species that we either just don't know enough about, or we think we know where they might be, and actually being able to resource going out and looking, continuing that true naturalist discipline and commitment to explore and understand habitat is really important. And in this case, it's paid off because it was found in 4 new locations across Marlborough. And I particularly like this. The moth was found during searches undertaken on a hunch. So with all the science, the entomologists just felt like they might be there. The force was with them.
That's cool. They actually thought this moth was extinct, and turns out it's surviving, if not thriving. Very cool conservation story this week. Mate, I'm excited about this week's critter. It's some spectacular photos that you've sent through.
A
they are spectacular photos, and it is in fact a spectacular critter. And we're stretching our terminology, obviously, because sometimes critters are plants, and today critter is, for our purposes, a critter is a fungus. It is the giant wetter fungus, Cordyceps kirkii. So this is incredible. I highly recommend that you all go and take a sneaky look on your phone or your computer on the RNZ site on for this critter, because it just looks like something out of a science fiction movie. Yeah. Now, often our critters look like something out of a science fiction movie, but this takes the cake. So this is a fungus that finds itself inside giant wetter by being eaten. The spores get eaten, and then it essentially takes over the body of the giant wetter and bursts out as tiny mushrooms all over it, which is both revolting, macabre, and endlessly fascinating.
Yeah, the picture reminds me of, you know, when you go to the beach for the summer and you're just driving up, your wife says to you, "Did you clear out the fruit bowl?" You say, "Yep." And then you get back 3 weeks later, and what used to be fruit is now just this growth of white fur, and I guess sometimes mushrooms.
I guess. So what's particularly kind of cute about this one is they very much look like, they're tiny little mushrooms, which of course are the fruits of a fungus. It sort of also looks a bit to me like someone dropped a giant wetter in the deep fryer.
Yep. Which, you know, in the future, if the numbers get up there and if we get pretty creative about where we're going to find our protein, it's not unthinkable.
True. Yeah. Battered or crumbed. I don't know. you know, giant wetter are one of my favorite invertebrate, let's be honest. Because the giant wetter are so rare, so too we think must this fungi be. Now, what I think is really fascinating, it's hardly ever been seen, right? So it attacks giant wetter. Very little is known about it. It's only ever been found by entomologists out there looking for wetter rather than mycologists, who are scientists who study fungus, out looking for fungi, which means there's probably more out there. And it's been found on the Cook Strait giant wetter on the Marlborough Sounds, or the Takapuriwa giant wetter. And, of course, the interesting thing about this is we are often, in our efforts to improve numbers of things, moving animals around onto other islands. And so perhaps we've been able to move the fungus with them. And we know that it's also been found on the giant, the massive wetaponga on Hauturu or Toi or Little Barrier Island. So we have actually talked about a variation or a type of Cordyceps fungi before, which of course is the vegetable caterpillar. So we chatted about the vegetable caterpillar way back in 2017, as I recall. And those are the ones that are in the forest, and the little Purina moth larvae or caterpillars are underneath the forest floor. And the vegetable caterpillars, essentially, they ingest the spores. What happens is they become mummified. So the mycelium, which is the guts, if you like, of a fungus. So the bits that you can't see of a fungus are these incredible kind of stringy, like hyphae, what's the best way to explain it? Like a web of interconnecting tiny fibers. Yeah. And they fill up what remains of, in the case of the vegetable caterpillar, the caterpillar, and then just becomes this mummified thing that bursts up through the soil as a fruiting body, and then biffs spores around and starts the whole process again.
Yeah, they're worth looking up, actually, if you're new to Critter of the Week, the vegetable caterpillar, neither a vegetable nor a caterpillar.
Yeah, and back in the day, locals used to sell them as souvenirs. And pre-European times, vegetable caterpillars were really important ingredient for Māori for the ink for their tattoo, for their moth.
Whoa, so, wow.
Yeah, so anyway, back to this one. So this one gets into the wetter, And we think we don't quite know yet if it is parasitic, but you know what? Based on my read and the fact that the weta dies a horrible death with mushrooms sprouting out of them, I'm going to suggest it probably is, because I don't think that there's a lot of benefit to the weta in this. And so what
you don't think it's an agreement they've come to?
Not really. But it is. So we know that the fungus gets inside the weta, feeds itself. So the reason that the fungus have evolved to do this is it's using the body of the animal to feed itself, because fungus, you know, they don't photosynthesize like plants, and so they're using the feeding off the animal and then using the remains of the carcass to burst out and start the whole process again. They are fascinating in terms of that approach to life, and we think there's probably around 400 or 500 species of cordyceps fungi across the world, and they are really effective in terms of their life history. What we're probably concerned about, though, from a fungi perspective, is while we haven't categorized the giant weta fungus into our threat classification list, it follows that if the giant weta are on the threatened list, which they are, I think they're naturally vulnerable, so too will be the fungi, because of course they rely on the giant weta in order to be able to complete their life cycle. So anything that wrecks life for the giant weta will impact on the fungi. So, you know, yeah, we already...
And you sort of referred to this, but, you know, they would do such a good job of relocating species from one place to another, but the casual observer, you wouldn't think of all the other things that sort of have to go with the species, right? So many things that are either dependent on the giant weta or the giant weta is dependent on. It's not just as simple as taking 100 weta and dropping them on an island, a random island, hundreds of kilometres away.
That's exactly right. And so it also makes us think more deeply about, you know, rather than thinking of a species on an individualistic sort of sense, it's exactly that. What is the intricate web of life that this species relies on, or that rely on it in order for it to be able to create, you know, the function of the ecosystem, the modi, the thing that makes it really drive? And we've seen a couple of examples over the years where we've, you know, accidentally taken animals or a species from one place to another and not taken the hangers on. And in those instances, sometimes it doesn't really work out for the main focus species. And we wonder whether, you know, did they need those hangers on? Yeah. Did they, the little things that come with them in order
like
to
like a rock star without their groupies?
That's right. So I just love this one because, you know, I really do love science fiction, except as I've got older, I've got more and more wimpy about watching it. So I could, you know, I find it quite hard to watch a really terrifying...
Yeah, side note, I've been told about one on Neon called Raised by Wolves, which sounds really cool and science fiction-y, set in the future about androids and things. You should give that one a go if you've got the, you know, if you got the stomach for it.
Well, unless it's got rainbows and unicorns in it, I'm out. but I can live with this one in terms of, you know, who doesn't love a story about the ancient, you know, and if you look at a giant weta, it looks like a cross between a bloomin' Humvee and a Transformer, you know, these look like kind of things, and yet something as tiny as a little fungus spore can ruin its whole life, burst out of it as mushrooms, and then start the whole vile process again.
Go take a look at it on the website, rnz.co.nz/Jesse. How would you rate its attractiveness on a scale of 1 to 10, Nicola?
I'm giving it an 8 because it's so disgusting.
Yeah, straight to the Weta Workshop, right?
Yeah, that's right. You're welcome, guys. That can be in the next film.
Awesome. Nick, thanks so much. Catch you next week.
Thanks, Jesse. Have a good weekend.